Hello and welcome to Quiditivia's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at Quiditivia. Remember, so you don't have to miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Andrew Cartwright, investment manager based out of our Boeing office. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and head of property research, Ollie Creasy. Welcome, Richard and Ollie. So, Richard, last week started off with the inauguration of Trump for his second term at the White House. And he was always likely to hit the ground running. And indeed, we've already had a raft of executive orders relating to immigration, trade and energy regulations. And he's also had an initial call with President Xi of China, and apparently a somewhat fiery conversation with the Danish Prime Minister over Greenland, which may well have had many Americans looking up where Greenland actually is. We've also had Trump calling for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, which does appear somewhat ironic, given that his own policies for imposing tariffs would potentially be inflationary. Although it is interesting to note that he has since put tariffs on hold for Colombia following a deal being reached on deportations. Richard, we know what we are getting from Trump, which is really to expect the unexpected and a lot of political posturing. And so far, the market reaction has been positive. And I know that our equity research team has been following a basket of stocks that we would expect to benefit from Trump's policies. And so far, those Trump trades have done pretty well, both in absolute. So firstly, what did you make of Trump's first week? Was it what you expected? And secondly, we know financial markets like certainty, which I think is fair to say we aren't going to get with Trump. And investors run the risk of making knee-jerk reactions in response to off-the-cuff comments and threats. Do you think this is something that as an investment manager we should be concerned about? Will things eventually settle down? Or do we need to adapt to an environment where we know there is going to be a significant increase in the volume of noise and political posturing?
I think we will. I think we'll have to pretty quickly. I mean, I think, Andy, that the first week, I'm not quite sure what I was expecting, but it was all even more manic and bonkers than I was expecting it to be, with his pronouncements on all sorts of areas, like you mentioned, from oil prices to Gaza to Colombian tariffs and everything. So it's going to make life pretty interesting. I think the first test, you know, a lot of it is he bluffing on tariffs on places like China, or, you know, or is he actually going to go through with it? And I think this week, you know, we're already going to get a big test of what he's been saying, because he's already been talking about, you know, from February 1st, 25% tariffs going on, you know, places like Canada, Mexico and China. So that's going to be the first big test. I mean, like you say, you know, it's fascinating that he's calling for global interest rates to go down at the same time as his policies are pretty inflationary. But I think those sorts of things people will just sort of discount and kind of ignore as time goes on. I do worry what scroll forward 6-9 months, you know, maybe he wants to see lower interest rates. How does he react towards the Fed if they keep rates high, and do markets start to worry about, you know, the institutions of the US being basically undermined by the Trump administration? That's something for later on, but those sorts of things we will certainly have to think about. I think we will gradually get used to this, but it goes back really to not getting caught up on knee-jerk reactions, as you say. It sounds a bit sort of boring and glib, but, you know, you've really got to focus on, you know, where do we think markets are going on over the longer term? Where do we think the opportunities are? When it comes to bonds, you know, we look at where yields are now and compare them to history, compare them to sort of current inflation levels, and we think they look pretty attractive, particularly, you know, even when it look at sort of longer dated bond yields over 5%, that's normally a pretty attractive entry point. So, you know, and then things like corporate bond spreads, very, very tight. And if you see, you know, Trump being basically chaos, those you would expect maybe those spreads to widen. So that's what we've really, I think, got to focus ourselves on for now. And hopefully we'll get used to it.
I mean, so touched upon their interest rates, and whilst in the US and Europe and the UK, we are eagerly anticipating further rate cuts. Last week, the Bank of Japan actually raised interest rates. Was that a significant move in your opinion? And looking forward to this week, we have both the US Federal Reserve and the ECB meeting to set interest rates. What do you think we can expect from those meetings?
I think Bank of Japan, that's fine. There was a time not so long ago where people were worrying about the Bank of Japan raising rates and sort of collapsing bond markets or whatever. That doesn't, bond markets haven't had a great time, but it hasn't been caused by necessarily the Bank of Japan. And another 25 basis point hike last week really didn't upset anyone too much, and that's fine. For certainly for the ECB. They're in a different world. Inflation's pretty low. Growth is not great. So they're going to be cutting interest rates again this week, probably by 25 basis points. The Fed meeting, unusually, is probably going to be a complete and utter non-event. They won't be making any rate changes. And they're a bit like a lot of investors with Trump. They're in a bit of a sort of wait and see mode, see where the economy is in 3 months' time, and then think about what to do about rates. So that should be a non-event. But then after that, not this week, but February the 6th, we're going to have hopefully another rate cut by the Bank of England, because the market's very much looking at the where the economy is not in a great position, and it looks like the Bank of England should be cutting rates again, before long.
And just Ollie, just turning to you now. We've heard Richard talking about rising bond yields over the past few weeks, and that's largely being caused by concerns over stagflation, particularly here in the UK. And of course, the bond and gilt markets are just one of the key areas that are directly influenced by interest rates. And another that always comes to mind is the domestic housing and property market. Now, there's been a flurry of updates from the UK house builders recently, and including Taylor Wimpey and Vistry, which, of course, in recent times has been in the news for all the wrong reasons. Could you give us an update on what has been happening in the house building sector and the tone set by those recent statements?
Yes, I can. Thanks, Andrew. It's a good introduction to the sector, actually, because it is highly interest rates affected. That's the right word. Since the beginning of 2022, it's been a pretty rough sector to be participating in, frankly. In some cases, share prices have halved since the beginning of that year, so the last 3 years or so, which you can imagine has been pretty grim. But the more recent statements that we've actually had last week, I think it was, that we had Persimmon, then Vistry, then Taylor Wimpey, sort of one, two, three trading statements for their year end. And actually, the tone there has been a little bit more upbeat. I wouldn't say it's sort of it massively upbeat. I wouldn't say that we're back to the kind of the roaring 2019 sort of data, but we are improving. What I think we can conclude is that for the most part, the house builders themselves have turned a corner. We've seen recoveries in the volumes for two of those three companies. That's Persimmon and Vistry. Taylor Wimpey may be a little bit behind the curve there, and I can go into a little bit more detail on what that's been about. But what we've seen for Persimmon and Vistry is a return to form in terms of volumes, volumes off lows in terms of what they've sold in terms of number, but also in terms of the house prices that they've achieved in those sales. So they're up a little bit as well. And that means the revenue numbers have improved. We're not sure that that's going to translate to higher profits for 2024, but the prospect for 2025 and beyond is looking a little bit more favorable than it has done for any point in the last 3 years, basically. I guess the message here is there's a long way to go, but actually we are now seeing ourselves coming off the bottom here, and maybe on a longish but a slightly more tangible pathway back to growth, and maybe one day even back to some of those numbers that we've achieved in the past few years before the interest rates were as high as they are today. I did mention Taylor Wimpey briefly there. They kind of It was unfortunate because we had two very positive updates from Persimmon and then Vistry And Taylor Wimpey slightly broke the streak on the third day there with a slightly less upbeat tone to theirs. The issue there was a few different things coming together. So their volume numbers didn't grow year on year in 2024. They were down ever so slightly. And then the house prices that they achieved were also down ever so slightly as well. The volume point is slightly nuanced. They never saw the same sort of declines as companies like Persimmon did. So it was a bit unfair to assume that they would be rebounding quite as fast as well. And it was also to do with the kind of cyclicality of each business. They had fewer outlets open, and as you can imagine, if you haven't got as many shops open, and that's effectively what an outlet is for a house builder, you're unlikely to sell as many of whatever it is that you're selling. So that was the nuance there. When it comes to the house price point, that was an interesting one as well. Taylor Wimpey gave us a little bit more information than anyone else did, and remarked that while they'd seen house prices go up in the northern half of England, the southern half of England, where, as I'm sure we're all aware, affordability is a little bit more stretched, that was where they were still seeing moderate, you know, slightly marginal, but negative house price declines. So a slightly more nuanced and less upbeat message from them. What I will finish on is to remark that all three companies kind of said early 2025 has been pretty good. It's early days and they didn't want to go into too much detail, unsurprisingly, but basically the first 3-4 weeks of the year seem to have been pretty positive for all three of those companies.
So slightly mixed messages from those statements, but perhaps overall a slightly more positive undertone. And Ollie, in the autumn budget statement, the new Labour government specifically made reference to the house building sector and with the prospect of further investment and reforms to key planning, policy and legislation. Could you summarise what the Chancellor has announced so far? And do you think there is more to come?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question, I suppose, really. Or was it a million-pound question? Either way, you're absolutely right to hone in on the two factors that really matter to the house building sector at this point in time are interest rates, and I suppose that ties into home buyers' affordability metrics. And the other point is government intervention, basically. You know, we've had, well, I don't know what it was now, 10 years or so of the Help to Buy scheme, massively helping the sector and in terms of volumes and also profits. What we've had from the Labour government so far has been very much focused on helping the supply side of the house building market, i.e. freeing up planning restraints, encouraging people to make it more feasible to build on land, whether that's, you know, greenbelt, brownfield, anything in between. And we've also seen a few, they're not even really made the headlines, to be honest. We've seen a few announcements as part of the budget to sort of remark on helping build more social housing with some fairly small numbers, to be completely honest. But, you know, loans to house builders that are doing social housing and that sort of thing. So helpful in the margins, and as you can imagine, helpful to build supply out by making planning a little bit more relaxed and achievable. But it only goes so far, right? You can give planning permission on every plot of land in the country if you want, but if the buyer can't afford to buy the finished house, that's still a problem. So the demand side is still very much unspoken for, really, by the government. And I suppose that's the big question, right? This industry has done very well through schemes like the Help to Buy scheme, which of course finished just at the sort of time when interest rates were coming to the fore. Until something like that comes back, the recovery and the return to those sort of that era of profits is pretty unlikely. Now, do I think there's more to come from the Chancellor or from the Labour government in general? That is too difficult, frankly, for me to answer definitively right now. What I would say is that if an announcement is made that targets the demand side of the equation, it will quite possibly make an enormous difference to the housing market, to the volumes that these house builders are building, and I would imagine also the share prices that they trade at. So it's really watched this space. The government is understandably keeping its cards very close to its chest if it has any cards to play in this area. The big problem, of course, is that it's spending money, which is proving difficult in all areas. But we're keeping a very close eye on this, because it's a without wishing to make a prediction that ultimately will inevitably prove to be wrong, it's something that could be a real game changer. So that's about all I'm willing to say on record at the moment.
Thank you very much, Ollie, and of course to Richard for those great insights today, and to you all for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We love to hear from our listeners, so please review the show now wherever you're listening and share it on your socials and tag us at Coolly Achieve It. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week, and in the meantime, head over to our website, www.coolachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on markets, news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. And that includes CoolAchieveIt's 2025 Economic and Market Outlook, which features Richard Carter, along with Chief Investment Officer Caroline Simmons and Head of Equity Research Chris Beckett, which is now available on demand. Finally, do you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts on our next podcast? Simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again to Richard and Ollie for your time today, and to you all for listening. See you next time.